It is Tuesday on Daily Delivery. I am Michael Rand. Happy to be back for another day and hope you guys are doing great out there as well. A little bit of a show in reverse today. Lavelle Neal III is my guest, Star Tribune columnist. He and I talked about a lot of current things. Right now, we got a lot of things on our minds. Lavelle and I talked about Vikings draft. We talked about Timberwolves. We talked about the Twins. We talked about the PWHL. We covered so many things, a lot of things that I would normally cover in a opening segment. I think I'm going to lead off with Lavelle and I just a moment here. End of the show, we'll get to a couple other things, some more current Twins things, NBA stuff that's of interest now. Wolves opponent has been determined. We know they will play the Nuggets in the second round starting Saturday in Denver after Denver beat the Lakers last night. Jamal Murray, another game-winning shot to finish off that series. And I'll get to an email with a theory on what in the world Atlanta is thinking with Kirk Cousins. But first, like I said, what I missed today is the interview. And here I go with Lavelle Neal III. Let's bring in Star Tribune columnist Lavelle Neal III today in studio at the Star Tribune. Sounds good. Looking good. How you doing, Lavelle?
I'm doing fantastic. How's everything with you?
I'm good. It's been a busy last couple weeks. Just, you know, personally, we're doing house stuff, getting ready to move. But it's also been a time of great celebration in the local sports scene. You get the Wolves sweeping the Suns. Everybody's fired up about the Vikings draft. The Twins, you know, big winning streak after that big start to the after that bad start to the year. Mm-hmm. I want to talk a lot of Wolves, but before the draft gets too far away, you were at the draft party for the Vikings when, you know, the first round Thursday night, they make basically two trades up. Didn't have to trade up as far as we might have thought to get J.J. McCarthy at number 10 and then trade again to number 17 to get Dallas Turner. What was the mood there? What was that like for you to be there?
A lot of energy, a lot of excitement, because I think the crowd came here knowing that they were going to walk out. No, with a new quarterback.
Yeah.
So I thought they were really fired up about that, and there was a lot of conversations about who to get and when would Kwesi move up in the draft to get his guy. And the Vikings ended up being benefactors of an unprecedented run on offensive players and an absolute panic by a couple teams that led to Bo Nix being taken in the first round.
12.
And Michael Penix Jr. being taken by the Falcons.
Eighth. What are the Falcons doing? Royce and I talked about this Monday, but The stunner of the whole draft was the Falcons taking Penix eighth after signing Cousins to, you know, 2 years guaranteed, 4 years overall.
Yeah, he's going to play at least 2 years. So Penix is going to sit for 2 years. I get sitting for one. Sitting
yeah,
for
of course.
Two. You're on a rookie contract. Now you've got 2 years to prove that you're the guy. I think that's a little risky.
I think it is too. He's going to be 26 by the time. He's 24 already. We have like a grizzled veteran by the time that comes around.
The Packers got away with it with Jordan Love. They sat him for, a couple years?
3 years.
3 years.
Just like Aaron Rodgers. But those guys were both picked in the 20s. Penix was eighth.
Yeah.
Eighth.
I know.
What was it like at the draft party when that happened? Because everybody still knows, like, they got the Cousins connection, stuff like that.
Oh, there was gasps. And then I just commented to the table next to me. I said, that paves the way for the Vikings to take J.J. McCarthy.
It does.
I was like, oh, my goodness. Atlanta Falcons overthinking something. Because they could have waited a year.
Yes.
It's a great quarterback class, but don't force it.
No.
You know, if you're going to have a guy sit for a year, you can wait till next year. See whatever.
Yes.
What your options are there. So
very strange.
Love the NFC South. The gift that keeps on giving.
Yes.
The Carolina Panthers traded the first overall pick with the Bears.
Right.
Plus, we got DJ Moore out of that. Plus, they stunk, so the Bears end up with the number one pick. And then you got the Atlanta Falcons follies, not just with the pick of Michael Penix, but the fact that the Vikings are going to get some picks from the Falcons for tampering the Chargers
or
Cousins.
Maybe, yeah.
So, thanks, God. Thank you so much, NFC South. Thank you.
As a Bears fan, how are you feeling right now about everything that's transpired this offseason?
I'm fired up now. I'm ready to start the season. I've still been a little nervous about Williams just because of some of the intangibles and possible personality flaws, but I've slowly come around to realizing this guy is a terrific talent, and if he gets in the right situation, he's going to a good situation with Chicago because of the offensive talent that's around him. I think J.J. McCarthy's in a slightly better situation just because he doesn't have to come in and be the guy right away.
Right.
Sam Darnold can run the show until J.J. McCarthy proves him useless.
Right.
You know, or renders him into a second string role.
Right.
Caleb Williams has to come in right away. But, man, great receiving core now with Keenan Allen and Romo Odunze. Cole Kmet's a solid tight end. Offensive line's gotten better the last couple of years. You got to have a competent offensive coordinator, you know, not Luke Getsy, who called like 18 screen passes one game. You know, so the Bears fans are fired up. I went to Costco yesterday.
Okay.
Costco. And three people were like, what do you think about that Bears draft? Bear down. You know, LaVille, I'm from the south side of Chicago. You know, all of a sudden, they're it's okay to come out now because there's so much optimism in the air. But I'm really happy for my Vikings fans, my Viking fans who are friends.
Yes.
Because they I hate the fact they have McCarthy because just being a Bears fan. I love J.J. I had him ranked second in my quarterback list because he's a proven winner. Yes, not a big volume of work, but when he needed to make a play, he made it.
Yeah.
Tight windows, getting rid of the ball quickly, using his mobility. And I told the crowd, at the, because I was part of a panel discussion with Mike Musselman and Ron Johnson afterwards. Okay. And I was like, I said, McCarthy won. He's from Chicago, tough guy town. He played hockey till he got to high school.
Yeah.
Who better to run the Vikings offense than a hockey playing quarterback?
Right.
You know, so there's a lot of positives there.
What are your updated NFC North? What's your updated NFC North power rankings right now?
Okay, well, I'm going to be biased here because I'm going to have the Lions first.
Yeah.
I think the Bears are going to have a good season. Now, you have to remember, too, the Bears were two fourth quarter collapses away from finishing 10 and 7, I believe. I think they finished 7 and 10. They would have been 9 and 8 in a postseason conversation.
Yeah.
They blew a fourth quarter lead at home to Denver when they're up by multiple scores.
Right.
And they're up by all the multiple scores against the Lions at Detroit.
That's right. That was late in the year, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm going to put the Bears second, Green Bay third, and Vikings bringing up the rear, but they'll be a better team. I think both the Bears and the Vikings were 7 and 10. I can see the Vikes getting to 8 wins, 9 maybe.
And if we went into last year thinking this was one of the worst divisions in football, then the Lions were better than expected, Packers were better than expected. Now the Bears are getting better. The Vikings, team in transition, but they at least got some possibilities here for, if not this year, 2025. This could be one of the better divisions in the NFL next year.
Absolutely. And just the quarterbacks, too. You got intriguing quarterback collisions coming up here because you got Jared Goff, you got Jordan Love, Caleb Williams, and J.J. McCarthy eventually. You know?
Yeah.
This is going to be, especially not just next year, but probably 2026. 2025?
Yeah.
It's really going to be good with these guys getting some experience and the continuing increase of talent. So I think it's going to be the black and blue division is going to be back.
Yeah, it could be. It could be. Well, the draft was fun. I think the Vikings fans got what they wanted. It's been just like a fun stretch here because let's talk Timberwolves. This came out of nowhere for me. Watching the Wolves so much over the years, covering them, you have a certain expectation, and you go into a series where they've lost all three regular season games to Phoenix, and everything just feels like it's set up for, it was a great regular season, but do they have another gear? Phoenix kind of seems like they're built to win in the playoffs. They're built to beat the Wolves. And then the Wolves not only play well, they sweep. They sweep four games from Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal. I'm floored. I'm as surprised with this outcome as I've been with an outcome in Minnesota sports in a long time.
I could see that. I was at game two, and I just saw warning signs because Cat and Anthony Edwards, I think, combined for 7 points and one rebound at halftime in game two. And they still won. I think Ant was like 8 for 23 from the field.
He did not have a big game.
No, not good. And they still won.
Right.
Karl-Anthony Towns sat on the bench for most of the second quarter because of foul trouble.
Right.
They still won.
Yeah.
You know, so that told me that regular season success doesn't mean crap. The matchup advantages that the Wolves had spoke volumes. Part of me still thinks that the way the Wolves' offense made. The Suns have to play defense, and I think it affected them offensively.
Yeah.
Not yesterday, because, Devin Booker scored 49 and Durant scored 30-something. But I think in the other parts of the series, their ball movement. Phoenix was chasing all the time. They couldn't rotate over quick enough. You know, the Wolves made him pay for trapping Ant, because that was the thing they were doing a lot, trying to get the ball out of his hands. Their spacing, the ball movement nullified that. And I just think it affected him on the other end of the court. Phoenix is in a bad shape. They're in bad shape now. Do you know how many draft picks they've traded?
Well, look at what they gave up just for Bradley Beal. It was like four firsts and like six second rounders. Like they went all in for a team that won 49 games and got swept in the first round.
They had draft capital. They've given up going out to 2031.
Oh my gosh. Like that's as far as you can go.
They're gonna have the highest payroll in the league. They're gonna pay like $100 million luxury tax.
It's unbelievable.
Oh man.
And they've got no depth. They don't have a point guard on their roster. Devin Booker has to be the point guard, and that works sometimes. It just felt like they got worn down as the game went on. They just didn't have the depth, and when Grayson Allen got hurt and re-aggravated that ankle, that definitely, like, they couldn't afford any injuries or anyone in foul trouble. And when that happened, that was kind of the death blow for them.
When you have to bring Josh Okogie into the fray, you know your depth is a little shaky.
Yes. He's like a good energy guy. But, yeah, you're right. Like, they, you know, and it just maybe we – I don't even know how we would have seen this coming in retrospect. Like, the whole narrative – going in was this was a bad matchup for the Wolves, and for good reason. It looked like a bad matchup. It looked like, man, they'd be fortunate to make this a good series to sweep. I'm flabbergasted. I'm stunned by this outcome, and now I'm just looking at it and saying, well, they're competitive. Yeah,
gonna face the Denver Nuggets now in round two, and that's gonna be a hell of a series.
Yeah,
it is because a Jokic led team is never out.
Yeah,
never out of it, man. To me, he's the most one of the most effective offensive players in the game. When he's at the free throw line with the ball, it's like you're either going to get stabbed, shot, or hung with him, because he's either going to throw a behind the back pass to someone cutting to the hoop, throw shoot that behind the head jump shot he's got, or to two steps and drive down the lane and look so awkward and clumsy, but still like lays it up in there. He could just get you so many different ways, and they know how to play with him too.
Anthony Edwards, is he where do you think where's his ceiling? Like I was having a discussion earlier Monday. Is he potentially on a path to be the most beloved, the best Minnesota athlete of all time?
Whew. My good,
it's a lot to put on someone who's just 22, but like just the ceiling, you see it. He had 40 in the elimination game. Like if he becomes what everybody wants him to be, let's say he brings a championship here, like you're talking about like Kirby Puckett territory at a certain point.
Right. Well, I'm not going to try to sound like Stephen A. Smith, because he's been out there. Go, when I see Anthony Edwards, I see Jordan, I see Kobe, I see Vince Carter.
But you do those dunks.
It's like the explosiveness that he has in his game
and the strength.
The jump shot's beautiful. And he's finishing better. His finishing's gotten better. And you don't know, the mid-range game, the deep game, and the driving game, it's all clicking for him right now.
Yeah.
But he's smart enough to know that if it's not coming, he could still be effective rebounding and dishing the ball.
Yeah.
So you're watching a guy who's rounding out, and he's just 22 years old.
I can't believe he's just 22. He's been here for so long that he's just 22. Like, you saw the flashes for a long time. He's putting it together, like in a certain way. He and Jaden McDaniels, who are the future of this franchise. McDaniels had a huge series. I thought he was tremendous in a lot of these games, especially the game he took over and scored a bunch. I think that was game two. That combo, you know, obviously with everything around them, the supporting cast, and Kat still an all-star, Rudy Gobert, defensive player of the year candidate, Nikhil Alexander-Walker being excellent, Conley. Like, they've got the right pieces, but, like, those guys taking a step, that's so encouraging right now.
Yeah, it does. You know, and Jaden still has some offensive development to go through. The jumper needs to be more reliable.
Yeah.
But I think offensively, his IQ is growing, because he sees now the moments where he can drive to the rack and get things done. All right, he started that in game two specifically, when he was the recipient of the ball movement. He was getting lanes to drive, and he was taking that.
Yeah,
you know, so that's a good step there. And he does. He can't shoot from three. Steele will be more consistent that way, but there's still growth there with him.
Yeah,
like, add him a mid range game, maybe a little jump hook here and there. You know, he could do that. And that's scary. The one thing I hope the Wolves address in the near future. They got to cultivate a new point guard behind Conley because Conley is no spring chicken, man. They got to find a point who can at least come in and run the show. Although Ant can do it for stretches, but...
Yeah, but you saw what happened with Phoenix when you don't have a true point guard.
Right. Exactly. But you see how Conley has like settled down this group.
Oh, yeah.
He's
100%.
Like the old soul in that lineup who can see and do things. He would be a great mentor to a young point guard. The Wolves can get one.
Yeah, I don't know if they need that next year because they did sign Conley to that extension. But yeah, you wonder when someone like him is going to hit a certain wall. But his game seems to be aging relatively gracefully. Like he's never had to be the quickest guard or something like that. So I think he can still be effective. But that's a question for maybe two off seasons from now. But I think you're absolutely right. And I think that's something they'll be looking for. But right now the pieces are in place. As Brett Favre used to say, the pieces are in place.
Yes, they are. It's gonna be fun too. They got guys locked up.
Yeah.
Don't know, will next year's cap problem be that big of an issue? I think Glenn's willing to pay the tax because once you get a team that makes a run in the postseason, you're printing money in the NBA. You're printing money.
Yeah.
And so he can absorb, I think, the tax hit next year.
Well, we'll have to see if it's an actual run or just a one round, something like that. But they've already not exceeded expectations, but they've put their stamp on what they can be by sweeping Phoenix.
Does the winner of the Wolves and Nuggets series automatically go to the finals? Will the next finals participant come from that series?
I think it will. I think whoever comes from that will beat presumably Oklahoma City, just because I think they're young. They're a great team, but I think there's going to be some growing pains for them. Once you get that deep, and then Boston. I mean, look, we're way ahead of ourselves, but right. Boston's going to be hard. Anybody's going to have a hard time beating Boston. But I do think if they can beat Denver, it's going to be the kind of thing where they could go to the finals. Yeah, absolutely. They're not scared of Denver. They're not scared of Denver right now.
No, not at all. Well, it shouldn't be scared of anybody at this point.
No, I agree. A couple more things, Lavelle. Let's talk Twins a little bit. Now we're recording before Monday night's game against Chicago. Chicago playing a little bit better right now. They couldn't play any worse, but they swept Tampa Bay over the weekend just as the Twins were sweeping the Angels. So the Twins 7 in a row going into Monday night. Royce and I a week ago just ripping the Twins when they were 7-13. We're like, what is this team doing? They don't look like they can do anything right.
Right.
Rocco Baldelli was kind of talking the same way, though, so I don't think we were out of line. The opponents got easier. They swept the White Sox and they swept the Angels, but they look like a different team right now.
Yeah, well, a week ago during the last homestand, I spent a half an hour in Rocco's office, and I can tell you, everything you guys were talking about, he was talking about,
I'm sure.
too.
Yeah.
No, he was talking about potentially historically bad offense.
Yeah.
Pitchers that need to get over the hump and things like that. He's really worried about his defense. So defensively, they're a totally different team without Correa at short and Royce Lewis at third.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole infield's affected by that because now you got Willie Castro, maybe
Kyle Farmer.
Okay.
Yeah. Jose Miranda.
But when you pair those guys with Julian at second, who you already know, isn't that great of a second baseman.
Right.
And, well, Carlos Santana's at first because Rocco wants to have at least one glove there. It should be Kirilloff. A year ago, I was being told by the Twins, you do not want to see Kirilloff in the outfield.
Yeah.
Look what's happened this year. They've had to put him in the outfield.
Yeah.
But here's what happened. Because a week ago in the paper, I sounded the alarm. I was very alarmed what was going on. And I fell for it, because a month of the season, 1/6 of the season hasn't been played yet.
Yeah.
Which is akin to three NFL games?
Yeah, about
NFL
that. Games? Yeah, two or three NFL games. I know.
So it was a little premature, especially in baseball, because you can get turned around in April and May. You can be relevant. The Twins got hot for a week.
Yeah.
They beat the crap out of teams they should be beating them.
Yeah.
Which says something, because the Rays got swept by the White Sox.
Yes.
Houston's in last place.
Yes. They're terrible. They were like 8-19. I was like, what's going on with the Astros?
Dusty knew when to get out of there.
Yeah.
But they just needed to get right. This is the get right week for them.
Yeah.
And now they got the White Sox for three. This would be a juicy month because they played AL East this month. They've got Toronto. They got the Yankees. They got the Red Sox. They also have Houston. But let's see how far they can carry it. The offense is starting to wake up. Rocco's had to make his annual, it seems like he's always an annual early season offensive move.
Yeah.
He's got to make the juice up the lineup, and this year's is to get Ryan Jeffers batting first or second. You know,
speed, got to get a speed threat at the top of the order.
But they're hitting now. You know, he's batting over 300. The guys were taking better at bats. Yeah, Saturday's game was just the second time all year that they had more walks than strikeouts.
Wow.
You know, and I think they only struck out five times yesterday.
And they got this,
that's progress.
And they got this weird like summer sausage that they're all touching. Bobby Nightingale wrote about that.
I got to get deeper into that
yeah.
one.
Maybe you don't. I don't know if you do.
Touching a sausage. How'd that start?
I don't know. It's a, you know what, though? It's like it goes back to Bull Durham, right? Like the big classic baseball movie Bull Durham. It's like if you think that something's lucky, you do it. It doesn't matter how nonsensical it is. If you don't mess with a winning streak. You don't mess with something that you think is lucky because maybe it's giving you this weird confidence, giving you this weird kind of team camaraderie. Doesn't matter what it is. Like the vest that they wore last year, the Land of 10,000 yep. Rakes vest, like that didn't make them hit home runs unless it did, you know?
Yeah, I know. You see, the Angels have a halo for a home run hat or whatever.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing, too. What type of sausage is it? Because can it last the whole season?
I don't think they're saying it's going to get kind of funky. So
you know,
I don't
if
know.
If it's one of those Romanian sausages that you hang on off the wall, yeah,
right. I don't think that's what it is. I think it's going to get kind of funky at some point. But they got to do their best to like just keep it around and like keep it from like infecting people, I guess. But I don't know.
They need to vacuum seal that thing right now.
At the very least, what this week did is it kept them from being buried. Immediately, right? Like it feels like a lot of what they're trying to do right now is they got Kepler back, but they're still waiting to get Duran back, still waiting to get Lewis back. Like if you can stem the tide, like until you get those guys back, when you feel like you're a more complete team, that's what this week did. It was like it bought them a little bit of time. Now they're not like buried 9 games deep in the standings in late April. Now it's more like 5. And it's like, okay, as long as you can stay within shouting distance, you don't feel like your season's gone off the rails. Yeah,
Duran's about ready.
Yeah.
He pitched Saturday for the Saints. And averaged 101 with his fastball. His last pitch was 102.9.
Okay.
All right. So he's feeling good. He's letting it loose. Royce, I'm telling you folks, it's going to be a while.
Yeah.
It's going to be July. It's going to be All-Star break.
July?
It's going to be All-Star break.
What?
It's going to be All-Star break.
Oh, I thought it was going to be like early June.
Now, two people in the clubhouse told me it's...
Oof.
One person claimed that part of the quad tore off the bone.
Oof.
The other person wouldn't confirm that.
Okay.
But he did confirm that it's going to be possibly July.
Wow. Okay.
So
they got a lot of months to play without him.
I know that's a
couple months.
That's a
more.
Big blow. He's their best player.
He is.
I hate to say he's their best player.
He absolutely is their best player.
And early in the season, I asked Rocco, who's your best option at cleanup hitter? He said probably Royce.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, that's a hell of a thing to say.
It is, but it's true. The guy just comes up big. He's such an energy guy too. Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot for them to absorb. But if they can at least maintain. Before then, they'll be okay.
Well, Miranda's actually showing signs of life at the
plate.
Yeah,
he's been okay.
Which is huge because, I mean, his bat is the reason he's playing.
Yes.
It's not because of his glove. It's his bat. He's got a hit.
Really quick, you wrote about the PWHL the other day. Minnesota had a chance to clinch a playoff spot. Couldn't quite do it, but they got two more chances. What's the upshot of where they're at, and what did you take away from that?
Well, as I wrote my column, it's a very interesting league. They're set up for the long run. I guess they got a 10-year investment plan.
Right.
So they'll probably expand before that.
Yeah.
You know, they just had a couple games in Pittsburgh and Detroit to kind of market itself.
Yeah.
There was one game, I think Ottawa drew like 21,000 to a game.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's interest, you know. The team's a solid team. As I wrote in Sunday's paper, goal scoring is an issue.
Yeah.
37-1 goal games, 16-3-2 scores.
Wow.
You know, and so we're trying to figure out how to score more goals. Okay. I was like, do we need to start calling every little thing as a penalty and get more power plays?
Yeah.
Well, power play percentages across the league are down.
Okay.
You know, so I think it's part of its talent.
Goalies are good, too.
Goalies are really good.
Yeah.
The Minnesota team has two of the top five in the league in terms of goals against average. More talent's coming in.
Okay.
Definitely Sarah Fillier from Princeton.
Yep.
She's already a force on the Canadian women's team. She'll be in the league next year.
Okay.
And Natalie Darwood's actually brought up. She wants to get rid of because they're playing that neutral zone trap that's popular to NHL.
Yeah.
She wants to ban the trap. She thinks that would help open things up as well. So they're trying different things.
Yeah.
I can't wait to come up with a nickname.
No, it'd be nice. We like that.
Yeah. You know, I think I think Taylor Heisey is onto something with the Purple Rain. I think that's a good suggestion there. So, but I see it's in the growth spurt, man. Yeah. I think and the crowd was great. Yeah. They had 9,900 people. Most of the lower bowl at the X was full.
Nice.
A lot of young people.
Yeah.
A lot of females.
Yeah.
But it was a great atmosphere.
That's awesome.
People were fired up. Booing a referee.
Yeah.
You know, ref, you suck.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can see the appetite for it, and you see room for growth. I mean, by far, Minnesota is like the most Western team in the league.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if they can put one in Detroit, you know, just for travel purposes.
Right. Yeah, because they got to go a ways. What's their next opportunity to clinch? I'm trying to remember when they play next.
They're on
two
the
games
road.
Left, right?
Yeah, I can't remember off the top. They got two games left. But all they have to do, the thing too, Mike, about Saturday's game was that if they just got into overtime, they would gotten the
point. They got the point they needed.
They
would
get the point they needed. They were 2.7 seconds away from clinching a playoff berth. So, yeah. But it was a hard-fought 2-1 game. Former Hill Murray star scored the game winner for the Boston team. And, you know, I've been watching hockey for about 15 years on the Olympic level. And Hillary Knight has been, like, a fantastic player for the national team. She's been a tremendous athlete, does everything well, and it was cool to see her on ice for the Boston team. And she fed the game winner. She had the assist on the game winner. So, you get to see like the best women's hockey players. And a lot of people follow, you know, the sport. A lot of Canadians are in the league.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to Sarah Nurse. You know, some other stars are from Philippe Poulin. She's a goal scorer for them. I can't wait for the Gophers, Abby Murphy, to get in the league.
Oh, yeah.
Because she'll start she'll be getting in the fight.
She'll love that league. Yeah.
She will. She will. I mean, what a unique player.
Yes.
Led the nation in goals and penalty minutes.
Yes.
That's just an incredible.
I love it. It's a throwback. It's like an old-time hockey player. I should have had this in front of me before, but I didn't. Minnesota plays Toronto on Wednesday, and then they finish the regular season Saturday against New York. So those are their two chances to clinch.
New York
that.
Is terrible.
Okay.
New York is awful. The fact that the New York Times had a story a couple months ago, there's a mole inside the locker room.
Really?
Who was just telling all the inside details of how dysfunctional the team was.
That's amazing. We can Discord in first year one of this league. Well, I'm glad you wrote about it. I'm glad we're on top of it. Lavelle, E'Neal, do you got one more thing? Were you going to say something more than this?
No, I'm full.
Okay, all right. Appreciate you hopping on today, and let's talk again soon.
All right.
Royal Credit Union's smart checking accounts offer no monthly fees and no minimum balance. Enjoy financial freedom when you open your Royal Credit Union smart checking account online at rcu.org/gochecking. Insured by NCUA.
Great stuff from Lavelle, as always. Let's talk a little bit more Timberwolves and Twins, some current events that post-dated my conversation with Lavelle. First, we know for sure now that the Wolves will be playing Denver. We hedged a little bit in our conversation. We imagined that the outcome of last night's game would go in Denver's favor. It was close. Like I said, tie game, closing moments. Jamal Murray hits the game-winning shot. So Wolves, Denver. Denver dispatches LA in five. That game one will be Saturday in Denver. Couple thoughts on that matchup. One, like Lavelle and I talked about, I don't think the Wolves are afraid of Denver. I think they feel comfortable in the matchup. I think they certainly respect Denver. I think we've got all the storylines nailed down. They played in the playoffs last year. Denver won in five games, but the Wolves were certainly not the same team they are now. They were banged up last year. Naz Reid was hurt. Jaden McDaniels was hurt. Did not have their best foot forward in that series. Denver went on, of course, to win the NBA championship. Nikola Jokic is excellent. Like, I don't feel like the Wolves are worried about how they match up with Denver, I guess is how they would say. I think they feel like they have some answers for the things the Nuggets do well. That said, I think this will be a tremendous series. I think this will be a big, big challenge. I think the Wolves will have to bring even more, if possible, than they brought against Phoenix to combat Denver. But I think if Denver ultimately wins this series, it won't be because the Wolves were out of their depth. I think it'll just be that Denver is also that good. I think this series goes at least six games. It feels like it's got a lot of back and forth to it. It feels like it's got a lot of classic potential. So I'm just looking forward to it. I think it's going to be fantastic. Jeff Day, Star Tribune writer, by the way, will join me on tomorrow's show to talk a little bit more Timberwolves. He is a Timberwolves super fan, in addition to, of course, to being a writer and editor at the Star Tribune. I kind of want to get his perspective just on what this journey has been like, more from a fan perspective, just what the joy is of this team. So that will be coming up on Wednesday's show, or planned at least to be part of Wednesday's show. So a couple interesting nuggets, too, on the Nuggets and the Celtics. One, Jamal Murray kind of nursing this calf injury. He played yesterday, was really effective despite being told basically, hey, maybe you want to sit this one out. He's missed a bunch of games this year because of the calf injury. That bears watching. Further down the road bears watching, too. The Celtics, Kristaps Porzingis, hurt in last night's win. They took a 3-1 series lead over Miami, but he could be out for a bit here. He was in a walking boot after the game. Celtics are great even with or without Porzingis, but he is certainly a key cog in what they do. So as we think about the future, as we think about the Celtics being invincible, if Porzingis is out for any extended period of time, they will have a tougher time getting through the East. So watch that as well. Twins beat Chicago 3-2. Eight straight wins, 15-13 now. Eight straight wins since Royce and I blasted them really good 8 days ago on Daily Delivery. They've just been tremendous since then. They've played easier opponents, but they've gotten a little bit of everything. The thing I want to focus on for just a minute is their relief pitching. Bullpen ERA right now, they got three more scoreless innings last night. Bullpen ERA right now, third best in the major leagues, 2.54. That is tremendous. Third best in the majors, like I said, at 2.54. Only the Mariners and the Guardians have been better. They thought they would have a good bullpen, and they certainly do. And that is without any contributions with Joan Duran, who, like Lavelle said, should be back soon. So you add him to that mix. That is what has carried them through, you know, even some of these earlier games where they were having to win close games, having to win with only pitching when the offense wasn't going. Now the offense has caught up a little bit. Carlos Santana is on fire. He had another home run yesterday. So the bullpen can keep them in things as long as they don't overuse them, as long as they don't work them too hard. And, you know, compared to other bullpens, they're actually not getting super overtaxed. Right now they have the 19th most innings in Major League Baseball. They played a couple fewer games than some teams, but seriously, they're not overtaxing their bullpen relative to other teams. So if that's a concern of yours, if that's a concern of mine, maybe something we don't have to worry about as much. So kudos to the Twins for building a bullpen that has helped them withstand some of these early season slumps. 15-13 now. We can all kind of take a deep breath. It's the last day of April. They're not buried. There will be relevant baseball through the spring, maybe the summer into the fall. They are not the terrible team they looked like 8 days ago. Let us finish with the cooler and a little sounder.
Time to check my social media, yeah.
To see who loves me online.
Hashtag blessed life.
Got an email from a listener, says, just a theory. Hi, Michael. What if Atlanta, talking about the Falcons, is pretty sure that they will lose a first-round draft pick next year due to the tampering case with the Vikings? If they were to wait until next year to draft a quarterback, they wouldn't have much to choose from in the second round and beyond. If Kirk Cousins isn't able to play yet due to the Achilles injury and or gets hurt again, they need a really good backup now. Even if Cousins does play, they will still need someone in 2026. Their window to win is now and will last a few years. They need a great quarterback in Cousins and a really solid backup in Michael Penix. They know how good Taylor Heinicke is, so they know they need someone else. The most logical guy to take over of those who are still left in the draft was a 24-year-old versus a 21-year-old. Maybe they even tried to trade down but couldn't find any takers, so were forced to take Penix at 8 instead of a lower spot. They also knew that there were teams waiting for Penix to drop further, like Denver and Las Vegas. Just a theory made up of things I've read and some things I put together. Love the show. Keep up the good work. These things are logical. I get it. I think these are some good theories on why the Falcons might take Michael Penix Jr. Maybe they think he might have to play this year if Cousins isn't as durable again this year. Maybe they're looking that far into the future. And you're right. Maybe they don't think they're going to have a chance to draft a quarterback that high again. It just seems the biggest thing to me is where they took him at number 8. Usually a number 8 pick you would think is going to play by year two at the latest, right? Like a lot of these guys play at least part of the way through year one. They have given Kirk Cousins such a guaranteed deal that he is virtually assured of being the Falcons starter as long as he's healthy for two seasons. So they've basically bought themselves insurance, but they've also burned up a couple years probably of Michael Penix Jr.'s rookie scale contract, you know, 2 years of those of that value. So it just doesn't make sense to me based on the draft slot and based on what they do with Kirk Cousins. I get the logic. I think that's a good, those are good takes, good points to make. They help kind of explain it. But man, if you think you have a team like Lavelle and I talked about, you think you have a team that can compete this season, wouldn't you like to use the number 8 pick on a player that can help you win right now? But we'll see if it works out for them. Maybe in 2026, 2027, we'll be hailing the Falcons as geniuses and Kirk Cousins will be gone and we'll see where everything goes from there. That will do it for me today. Thanks again to everybody for listening. Thanks for the emails. Love to get good, thoughtful emails that I can kind of talk about on the show. Send them my way. Keep listening. Have a great rest of your Tuesday. Back at it again tomorrow.